All right, so I think as Damon was kind of prepping y'all for the next couple of classes, I've got all the guys in here with me, and my wife has all the ladies. We are covering the same sort of material, okay? She has her master's in astrophysics from the University of Alabama. I have my PhD from the University of Alabama in astrophysics, all right? So we're going to do 101 level stuff, but we're going to talk about some pretty awesome stuff. It's not deep. We'll throw some numbers out there, but the idea, okay, is to grasp the view of the world that the Bible tells us, all right? Gives us the picture of order, of design, of structure, of where it came from, where it's going, and what place we have in it. And so as the title of this weekend, Certain, all right, we want to show you things that are absolutely certain, okay, that give you some encouragement in your faith. Does God like to paint? All right, so we're gonna start off really simple, really basic here. All right, when we go out, you know, to a museum, to an art show, anywhere that you see talented artists, right? Whether it's musicians, whether it's painters, sculptors, whether it's what they can do reconstructing a 1969 Mustang, all right? The talent, the artistry, the purpose that drives someone, all right? This picture, when you look at it, all right? Does it look like something random? Does it look like something chaotic? Does it look like, you know, just a mess of scribble that maybe my one-year-old daughter would do? No. Okay, when you look at this piece of art, what you see is that there are elements in it that have purpose. All right, you see people, you see faces, you see events. This is an extremely famous piece of artwork called The Last Supper. All right, and when we look at it, we automatically recognize it was done by someone, some intelligence that had the idea, that had the color, that laid out their canvas, that got their materials ready, and then set about doing whatever they could do that I couldn't. Does anybody know who painted this? All right, Leonardo da Vinci. And of course, if you were to see this portrait, not portrait, but painting. Who is this or what is this? Mona Lisa. Mona Lisa, probably the most recognized piece of artwork in the world, all right? What would it mean for Leonardo? Okay, think about Leonardo da Vinci, okay? This Renaissance man who did so much, okay? He was an inventor, he was a mathematician, he was a scientist, he was a painter, he was a sculptor. Think about if somebody came up to a piece that he had just spent 2 weeks slowly working on the details, getting things just right, going back over it, glazing, fixing the canvas. What if somebody came up and said, what is this? You know, where did you find this, and how can I get it to just, you know, show up in my house? Or you know, where did you find that? Was it in a junkyard somewhere? Was it just out, you know, floating around in a river somewhere? Leonardo would have been, are you kidding me? You know, I've spent hundreds of hours working on something. But that seems silly, right? When we take and we pick up a CD or we download the track from iTunes, you go to a particular song. Why do you choose that song? You like it, all right? Is it different than song number 2? Song number 3? The other what? 200 million or however many that iTunes has, you chose that one because to you it sounded good. It had a different beat, tempo, pitch, rhythm. Okay? It appealed to you. Maybe you liked the artist because of what other things they do. When you listen to a song, when you see a painting, you recognize that there was something behind it that gave it the impression, the characteristics that you liked in it. This is a famous piece of artwork, water lilies. Anybody know who painted this? Close. Another painter, Claude Monet, all right? This is one of, I don't know how many, paintings of water lilies, Okay? He didn't just paint one scene of water lilies or two scenes or three. He painted dozens. Okay? To him, he saw beauty in it. Why do you think he painted it so many times?
He found it likable.
Okay. He liked the subject. Okay. He looked at it. He thought it was beautiful. He thought that they had this particular place in their environment. Okay. That maybe they were fragile. And he wanted to paint them before they faded away. Or the other thing to think about. When he painted it once, did he say, ah, that's perfect? Did he say, ah, my painting is better than what's out in nature? No, he painted it again and again and again because each time he looked, he saw something different. The lighting was different. The seasons were changing. The setting, the animals. He looked at what he saw and he tried his best to put it down on a painting. And he didn't get it. Any one of them was never as good as the original. All right, Claude Monet started the Impressionist movement. All right, what about this image? Who painted this image? Anybody know? All right. What's this image of? The Northern Lights. All right, taken maybe somewhere in Alaska, right? We got all this snow down here. Looks like maybe some sort of campfire or some sort of lighting off in the distance. We have our trees. And then we have this beautiful, I don't know even how to exactly describe it, these beautiful lights that just, you know, has anybody ever seen some video or images of the Northern Lights? How they just flash across the sky in greens and purples and blues. That's a pretty good image, right? That looks pretty good. It's because it was an image. That was a picture of the Northern Lights. Who painted the Northern Lights? Who?
God.
All right. Did you do it? Did you paint the Northern Lights? Did you put them there? All right. Every time they show up and dazzle people for weeks, did we put them there? Did maybe some scientist, right? Some scientist up in Alaska, he's shooting stuff up into the sky and he's caught. God put this in the sky. God caused this to happen. He set the environment. He set the conditions where it would happen. And what we have in nature is something that just astounds, boggles the mind, okay? Way more than any painter could ever put on a piece of canvas. And yet, some people walk out and they see it and they say, it just happened by chance. There's no purpose behind it. There's no characteristics that define it. It's just random. Well, what we're going to talk about is to completely defy that. Okay? God likes to paint. And we can see it in what's around us. Psalm 19, verse 1, right? Y'all have seen this verse before, heard it? The heavens declare the glory of God, and the firmament shows His handiwork. All right? What we see in the heavens, it speaks to, declares, it provides us with confirmation that God is glorious and that His handiwork can be seen. So we're going to watch as we move forward. And we'll go pretty quickly once we get some slides going. We're going to watch and we're going to take a tour of the cosmos. Okay? Think about these four characteristics, okay, that in our universe, things are vast. Things are structured, they're diverse, and they're detailed. Each one of these points to a fingerprint of God, a characteristic of God being active and starting and setting up His creation. All right, so first, vastness. All right, our earth. Our earth, 8,000 miles in diameter. How many people are on the earth right now living? Approximately 7 billion people, all right? That's not 7 billion that ever lived on the earth. That's 7 billion living and breathing like you are right now. And we live on this planet that has biomes, ecosystems, continents, oceans, animal life, plant life, human life. All right? It's vast. Has anybody ever gone around in this room, gone around the whole world? No way. Has anybody ever been out of this state? Out of this country? To a different continent? All right. So we've traveled a portion of the world. But nowhere near would we say we've seen everything. It's vast. All right. We're going to take a quick scale, okay? And we're just going to talk about the different levels of vastness that we see in our universe. Right here is a picture of pollen grains, all right? So those things that you sneeze at, all right, get caught in your nose, give you allergies, these are pollen grains. They're so small you can't image them. You can't get this type of photograph with light. It has to be something even smaller than light waves, all right? So they use a scanning electron microscope. In the corner is a cluster of bacteria, okay? So think about, you have this enormous globe we call Earth. And on it, we have things that are even smaller than light waves, bacteria and pollen grains. We have plant life, right? This is the underside of a sunflower leaf. The scale that we were just looking at would fit inside this yellow box, all right? And even smaller, because in PowerPoint you can't make lines that small. All right, so the pollen grains would fit inside that yellow box. And so then we blow up and we go out 10 times. All right, we expand our view 10 times, and all we're seeing is a leaf. All right, the Amazon rainforest, the densest part on our planet, okay, for biomass, that's mass of life, okay, so dense in this area. That little square would be the same scale of the single leaf that we were just looking at, right? So we've blown up our view 10 times even more. All right? Go another 10 or 100 times, and it's our whole Earth. And inside that little square are hundreds of trees and creatures and beetles and bugs and people. All right? On this planet, we have the kingdoms of life, if you remember to biology, and you'll get to that probably later this week, all right? Animals, plants, fungus, protists, bacteria, all living on this one globe, okay? But let's expand out. We go 240,000 miles away from our planet. What's this right here in the bottom of the image? Say what? Good job. That's the moon, all right? So the Apollo astronauts who flew 250,000 miles away, when they orbited and went around the moon, they saw our planet, right? At that time, probably 6 billion people living on that planet. They were able to look back and see them all in just a couple of inches of area. All right, let's go even farther. All right, here, what planet is this? All right, this is Saturn. You see those beautiful rings. It's kind of a funny picture of Saturn, right? It's black. Saturn's, all right? Where do you think the sun is? All right? This is in the shadow of Saturn, all right? We had a space telescope orbiting Saturn, passed into the shadow, and then looked back to try and see all of the rings being lit up by the sunlight coming through them. That's about the scale of our Earth and Moon inside that box, 1 billion miles away. We took an image of ourselves, right? A selfie, 1 billion miles away. Oops. But what's cool is if you zoom in, can anybody see that speck? Can you see that? There's a tiny little dot about the size of my laser pointer, and that's the Earth. All right? Just one little blue dot. All right, but if we even go farther, right? Saturn is just one planet in our solar system. So here are sort of the orbits of the planets in our solar system. Here's kind of a blown up interior. Mercury, Venus, Earth, Mars. We have Jupiter, right? This red. Saturn, that's where we were just looking. Uranus, Neptune, and then we have the dwarf planet now, Pluto. All right, so that's our solar system. Remember, the distance between the center and Saturn, 1 billion miles. Between those two. All right, but our solar system is made up of these planets and the sun. This is by scale, okay? Not distance, but size. Here's Earth. And then you can see how big Jupiter and Saturn and the rest. All right. Here's just a quick montage. The sizes of the planets. All right. Sizes of the planets. Oh, wait. But what about Jupiter next to different stars? Here's the sun. Our sun's not the biggest star in the universe. No way. All right. Here we are over here. This big blue ball, if you shrink it down, becomes that little ball next to Aldebaran, which is in the constellation of Taurus. And then we go farther, farther, and we get to stars like VY Canis Majoris, one of the biggest stars in the entire universe that we know of. All right. If you put it in the middle of our solar system, would consume all the planets out to Jupiter and past. All right. Saturn would be the only planet that could survive if that star was in our solar system. All right. But what's the difference between a solar system and a galaxy? Anybody know? Yes, sir, they're in the back. All right, there is a huge difference in size, absolutely. Solar system, all right, solar system. It's the system that goes around what?
The sun.
All right, goes around the sun. So it's the system around the solar or soul, the sun. A galaxy, all right? A galaxy is made up of stars, so not just one star like the sun, but stars, gas, and dust. It's believed, okay, the best of our knowledge and ability, this is what our galaxy might look like, all right? Might look like. Have we ever been outside our own galaxy? No way. This galaxy is 100,000 light years across, okay? 100,000. Our sun, if our sun was sitting right here, the closest star to our sun would be 4 light years away. All right? 4. So we would be sitting right there next to another star, but yet our galaxy is 100,000 light years across. All right? So this is what we think our galaxy looks like, made up of these stars, gas, and dust, and we'll get back to that shortly. We sit inside our galaxy, so we've never seen the outside. This picture, which is kind of hard to see with the contrast right now, it's an oval image, okay? And we see this density of light that goes horizontal, all right? This is what we see when we take an image of the entire sky, okay? The entire sky, northern hemisphere, southern hemisphere. We see that there is a region of the sky that is more dense with stars, gas, and dust. And then some parts of the sky are relatively devoid or relatively low density of stars. Okay, and so we can understand a little bit of the shape of the galaxy that we sit in. But take that same view and take out all the stars. All right, take out all the stars. Everything that is in our galaxy that we can account for, if we kind of delete them from the image, all right, this is the view that we might get. Does everyone see these little dots? Just looks kind of like a sandpaper or peppered all over it, right? What do you think each one of these little dots is? Say it again.
They're galaxies.
They're galaxies. Every single dot, about 1.5 million dots on this image, are galaxies. Somewhere 10,000, 100,000, maybe even a million light years across, each of them their own, all right? But they're so far away from us that they appear just as a single speck in our sky, all right? So when we talk about the universe, and here's a plot. If our galaxy was kind of in the middle of this plot, each one of these little dots would be a galaxy, and it was just sort of plotting maybe distance away from us, all right? When we think about our universe is absolutely just incredibly vast, all right? And here's the question, okay? Here's the thought. How did all of this space, all of this stuff, galaxies, stars, planets, dust, gas, okay? That's just nebulas that are burning. Where did it all come from? Where did it all start? Where did it all originate? All right, it came from somewhere. It had to. It's physical. We see it. It's here. It's observable. We can measure it. We can watch it. It came from somewhere. And the question is, Where did it come from? All right? It's vast. Something gave it its vastness. All right, let's move on to the next thing. Structure. All right? So again, just sort of getting our view of God as a cosmic painter. All right? This is another galaxy, very well known, called the Whirlpool Galaxy, Messier number 51. All right? What do you notice about this galaxy? What's the shape of it? Definite spiral. And that's exactly what astronomers, all right? One of the major classifications of galaxies, they call spiral galaxies. Just by looking at it, you say, it's got pattern. It's got structure to it, right? We have this bright nucleus in the middle, and you can see these rings or these lanes of dust and stars and gas that sort of spiral out from the nucleus. And as it gets farther out, you can see the arms start to open up and widen. It's a spiral galaxy. We see structure. We see order to it. All right. We talked about this just a moment ago. This is our solar system. Our solar system has structure to it. Every single piece of material in our solar system obeys gravity, follows its own orbit. All right. The Earth orbits around the sun. What does Mars do? Orbits around the sun. What does Saturn do? Orbits around the sun. Jupiter, Uranus, Neptune, Pluto. They orbit around the sun. What about the moon? It orbits Earth, right? But Earth is orbiting the sun, so the moon also goes around the sun, more or less. What about all the asteroids? The sun, comet, sun. What about the 60 moons of Saturn? What do? They orbit Saturn. 60 moons of Jupiter. What do? They orbit Jupiter. They have a well-defined trajectory, path, orbit that they follow. They follow it based on the laws of physics. Each one has its own characteristics. Did you know that we have moons in our solar system that have volcanoes? Moons in our solar system that have geysers? Moons in our solar system that have enormous craters and valleys? Lakes of methane. Not water, lakes of methane. Think about all these different structures that are processes that are undergoing in our own solar system, just our own solar system. All right? Absolutely amazing. We looked at this a second ago. These are the what? Rings of Saturn. Rings of Saturn. Now, I've got a ring on my finger here, right? One solid piece of metal. Are the rings of Saturn these solid pieces of rock, right? Just kind of big rings kind of floating out there. What are the rings of Saturn made of? Anybody know? Dust, ice, rock, all of the above, okay? You can't see it from this resolution, this scale, but there are objects in those rings the sizes of houses, okay? The sizes of cars, all the way down to the size of basketballs. Probably 100,000 objects that make up just these rings around Saturn. What does every one of those objects do? Orbit Saturn in its own orbit, all right? That doesn't mean that there's not some other object a little farther ahead of it in its orbit, all right? It's a pretty clustered, dense area, but every one object has its own mass, its own temperature, its own characteristics, its own orbit, and sits there in this structured system going around Saturn. What about our sun? Does our sun have an atmosphere? Absolutely. Okay. Our sun has layers, just like the Earth, right? The interior of the Earth, often thought of as being molten rock, and then we have the outer crust, and then we have the atmosphere, and it goes all the way out to the mesosphere, the ionosphere. We have these different layers. The sun has that same exact type of system. The inside is seething hot, all right? 10, 20 million degrees in the core. You get all the way out to the surface, and it's 8,000, 10,000 degrees Fahrenheit. But yet there is this atmosphere, this structure, okay, that keeps the sun from expanding and exploding off, and it also keeps it from collapsing in on itself due to gravity or some other. So So we have these balance of pressures from radiation trying to get its way out to gravity trying to pull all the mass in. We have this balance that keeps the sun going. And we're going to talk about it on Sunday. We're going to talk about the sun and how active it is, how violent it is. So make sure to stay tuned for that. All right. In the universe, we have extreme diversity. Tell me something, some variation that you see in this image right here. Say what?
Color.
Okay, color. Let's talk about this for just a second. This image has a huge diversity in color, right? You got blues and reds, you got oranges, you got some sort of like pink colors, you got some kind of dark brown sections. Every one of those colors tells you something very specific about the material it's coming from. Okay? It could tell you that the gas is oxygen gas. It could tell you that the gas is hydrogen gas. It could tell you the temperature of the gas. Is it hot? Okay? Or is it cool? Maybe it's just reflecting some star that's nearby. Some of the dark regions, like down here at the bottom, this little dark patch, all right? That tells you that there's actually dense dust, so dense that the light behind it can't get through, all right? Very cool, very dense dust. You have this interesting object right up here, right? It has this kind of this yellow, it's circular, it's got some sort of pattern to it, structure. There's a star sitting in the middle of that. Probably a nova, all right? A nova star that has created these shells of gas around it. Tell me something else about the variation you see.
Shape.
Say what?
Shape.
Shape. You know, broad in general, we have these dense sort of wisps kind of that come through, and then we have these areas of just kind of red and black, okay? All of these shapes are patterned by all of the various gas and dust and stars that are embedded. We have this very large cluster. You see all those bright pinkish dots and reddish dots, this cluster of stars, all right? This huge diversity. This nebula is not in our galaxy. It sits in a galaxy that's very near to us called the Large Magellanic Cloud, all right? So we have this diversity even outside of our own galaxy. We think about the solar system. We've already talked about it some. We got planets, stars, comet, asteroids. This is an interesting picture right here, all right? This is an asteroid. What do you think that is? A moon of?
Earth.
Not Earth's moon.
Saturn.
Not of Saturn. What is it next to? We have asteroids in our solar system that have their own moons. That asteroid right there is orbiting around this bigger asteroid. All right? Again, vast, structured, very diverse. Look at this image. In Job chapter 38, we have this verse, verses 31 to 33. Can you bind the chains of the Pleiades or loose the cords of Orion? Right? Here's Orion. All right? This is the constellation Orion. Can you lead forth the Maseroth or constellations in their season? Can you guide the bear with its children? Do you know the ordinance of the heavens? Can you establish their rule on the earth? This is God speaking to Job. And he says, look at nature. And specifically, he says, look at Orion. Look at these constellation of stars. Do you loose the cords of Orion? All right? What do you think he means by the cords of Orion? Has anybody ever seen the constellation Orion? Okay, a few. How do you recognize it? There are, if these lines weren't here, there are three very bright, very close, very linear stars that are all lined up, right? And you see that, okay? That's probably what God was referring to when he was speaking to Job. Loose the cords of Orion, all right? Maybe the belt of Orion, because it's such a well-known, established constellation, all right? In this constellation, we see a few bright stars. Tell me something about these stars that you see. We're thinking diversity.
They're really bright.
Okay, we have some that are extremely bright. Look at this guy down here in the corner. That star's name is Rigel. All right, he said bright and blue. Look at that. That star right there looks way different than that star right there. Okay, There's lots of reasons why that's the case, but it's obvious, okay? What about this star up here in the corner?
What?
Okay, it's yellow. And actually, if you were to see it at night, it would appear sort of a reddish color. All right, that star is named Betelgeuse. Some versions say Betelgeuse. All right, so we have Betelgeuse and we have Rigel, two stars in the same constellation. One, probably 30,000 degrees. The other, 7,000 degrees. All right, both of them very large, but Betelgeuse maybe 1 to 2 times bigger than Rigel in physical, if you were right next to them, all right, the size difference. when we look at the sky, do all the stars look exactly the same? No, that's obvious. Some are bright, some are not, some are yellow, some are red, some are blue, all right? This is a plot that scientists use quite frequently called the HR diagram, Hertzsprung-Russell diagram. And what it tries to do is just to show the diversity in the universe, all right? The diversity. Scientists know, astronomers know that when they look out into the heavens, that there's this wide range of types of stars, characteristics, temperatures, sizes, metallicities, okay? What kind of metals are in the atmospheres? 1 Corinthians 15:41. Can somebody read that for me? Right up here. Can you just read it right off the screen, just if that's all right?
There is one glory of the sun, another glory of the moon, and another glory of the stars. But one star differs from another star in glory.
The sun, the moon, the stars. What is this verse contrasting in those three objects, those three types? There's one glory of the sun, another glory of the moon, and another glory of the stars. What's the contrast? Does the sun, moon, and stars all look the same? No. Okay. Paul, in writing to the Corinthians, is saying, you know, it is so obvious that the sun, the moon, and the stars all have their unique glory, different in size and in brightness and in appearance and presentation, how they look. One star differs from another in glory. He goes on to talk about how the soul and the man have a similar sort of distinction in glory. All right? But Paul used this obvious fact that even they knew at that time. All right? Galaxies. We talked about spiral galaxies, right? Like maybe some of these on the end that have this spiral structure. But look at all the different types of galaxies, right? We have these nice spherical shaped ones like basketballs. Works its way to some sort of rugby ball, to a football or disc. All right, then we get these spirals. Some of the spirals are very, very tight. Some of them have bars across the nucleus. Some don't have bars. All right. Galaxies, diverse. But that was a simple plot. Look at this one. Look at all the different shapes and styles and structures. All right. Is our universe diverse? Is there a lot of different things all across it? Absolutely. All right. I'm going to skip this just for a matter of time real quick. All right. this is an incredible image. All right. What do you see in this image? Okay. You see lots of objects. And I heard some people saying galaxies, different shapes of galaxies. Look at some of these. Here's a spiral. Here's some other little pattern. This structure. You get some. This structure. Over 99% of every piece of light on this picture is a galaxy. All right? But this part of the sky, we didn't know that there was anything in that before they started looking at it. It was kind of this devoid part, okay? Everything was very faint, and so they looked at it for over 1 million seconds with the Hubble Space Telescope. And this is what they saw. About 10,000 galaxies, all right? Think about a dime, okay? Think about holding a dime. the President Roosevelt's on a dime. If you hold a dime out at your arm's length, how big would Roosevelt's eyeball look? Not very big. All right? If you took a dime and you looked at Roosevelt's eye, that's the same area of sky that this image would cover. All right? So 10,000 galaxies, it would take 12.7 million of these same size images to cover the sky. All right? So you've always heard these big numbers thrown around. How many galaxies are there in the universe? We don't know. No idea. Who's going to sit? Well, we can't. All right, sit down and count every single galaxy in the universe. We haven't even imaged the entire sky at different depths and different wavelengths. So what they do is they take an image like this and they say, how many galaxies are in this tiny little area? Oh, 10,000. How many pieces of that area would we need to cover the entire sky? And they just do a simple multiplication. And they get this number, 130 billion galaxies in our universe is the estimate. How many stars are in each one of those galaxies? A million? What, higher or lower? Okay, 10 million? A billion? 10 billion? 100 billion? 100 billion. Every single galaxy is thought to have about 100 billion stars of its own. I'll let you do the calculation yourself, all right? All right, what about detail? Okay, our universe is vast, it is structured, it is diverse, and it has detail. All right, this is the remnant of a star that exploded. Probably in 1054 AD, 1054 AD, this is the Crab Nebula. And in the center of this nebula, you can't see it in here, but in the center is a pulsar, a star that is pulsing, all right, sending off radio frequencies at a regular interval. But you see, look at the detail in there, all right? The compression of gas, the wisps, it almost looks like a honeycomb pattern where you have voids and other things. All right, we already talked about this. This is Orion, right? Do our eyes see every kind of light there is? Okay. No. What other kinds of light? Anybody have any ideas? Ultraviolet, that's one.
What?
Infrared, that's another. X-ray. Gamma ray. Radio. Microwaves. All right. What if we looked at this in a different light? Do you think we'd see anything different? If we look in infrared light, our famous Orion Nebula, that's what it looks like. All right? So when we go out in the night sky, all right, and we do some looking at the constellations, or maybe we find Mars or Jupiter, or we look at Venus early in the morning or something, or we look at the constellation Orion, we have to recognize there's so much more that's out there. All right? Look at the level of detail that we find just in that. Here's a nice spiral galaxy, all right, M101. Here it is in the light that our eyes might be able to see in a telescope. If we look at the infrared light, this is what it would look like. All right? Look at the difference between those two. All right? A fair amount of difference. Each one giving us some sort of different distinction to it, a different detail that we couldn't see in this other image. Look at this one. That's X-ray radiation. Part of my research to get my PhD was studying the X-ray radiation from galaxies. All right, so it's not just going to the doctor and getting your bones X-rayed. Our universe has X-ray sources all over it. That's what that galaxy would look like. All right, each one of these tells us something different about the detail in that galaxy. What types of objects, what temperature, what radiation levels are in each galaxy. All right, so this is our Milky Way. Our Milky Way, as we talked about, is sort of a spiral galaxy. It's flat. It's a disk. It's like the shape of a Frisbee. All right, so we have this detail to it. All right, so in our tour of the cosmos, right, in our tour, we talked about our universe being vast, being structured, being diverse and very detailed. Did anybody notice God's fingerprint? All right. It's supposed to be kind of humorous. Oh, there it is. Yeah, I see it. All right. Yeah, rings of Saturn there on the earth. All right. Why do I say that the fingerprint of God? Do we see God directly? Okay, we don't. Is that a tremendous problem for us? Think about it for a moment, all right? Is that a tremendous problem that we don't see God? Should our faith be shaken? Should we just get rid of it? You know, God, I can't see Him or touch Him or taste Him, smell Him, hear Him. Should that be a problem for us? All right? For many people in the world, many scientists, it's a problem. They say they don't see God. All right? How many things, has there been anything today that I've shown you by image that you had never seen before? Has there been some things? Okay. Did you maybe doubt that they existed? If I said there's pollen grains probably right now somewhere on your hands and on your, you can't see them. If I say that they're there, if you're sneezing and I say, well, it's probably, you know, oak or cedar. All right. We see that every night, right, on the news. They talk about the allergy report. Do we doubt it? Do we dismiss it? Oh, pollen grains, mold. That doesn't. Just because we can't see it. And the reason is because there is evidence despite the fact that we can't see it physically with our eyes. Anybody in here seen gravity? What does gravity look like? Is it round? Square? Is it blue? Red? Yellow? We don't see gravity. What do we see about gravity? Somewhere in the back. Anybody? Thank you. Excellent. We don't see gravity. Okay? Do we doubt that it exists? Well, I hope not for your sake. Right? If you go skydiving, please take a parachute. All right? Gravity exists. We don't see it, but we see the effects. And that's not a big problem. Has anybody in here seen Leonardo da Vinci? Physically seen him? Did I show you a picture at the beginning? No. No. There was no photographs at the time of Leonardo da Vinci. There was a drawing that I showed, but nobody in this room has seen Leonardo da Vinci. Do we doubt that he exists? Do we say, Leonardo da Vinci, he's a mythical character, right? He's from some Percy Jackson, Harry Potter story, is it? Whatever, sorry, my daughter's reading Percy Jackson. No, we don't doubt it. Why? I showed you the Last Supper painting. I showed you the Mona Lisa. We have his drawings of early helicopter and flying devices and floating devices. What about Isaac Newton? Anybody seen Isaac Newton in here? Not at all. All right? But we don't doubt his existence. When we look at nature and we see everything is here, all right? Everything surrounds us. It exists. Who put it there? It's structured. It has patterns and organization that obeys laws and rules. It's diverse. It's not all the same. I'm not made this, I don't look the same as some rock or some tree. We don't all look like blades of grass. There's this diversity, okay? When we see that, we can recognize that that's the effect of intelligence and of a creator. And through the rest of this, your time here, you will look at other aspects that point to who that creator is, okay? So I want you to remember, don't forget, Science 101 showed us the fingerprint of God and that we don't have to doubt His existence just because our eyes don't happen to see His physical form, all right? Now, I wasn't told anything about a bell schedule. So, students, do you all know anything about the bell schedule? Yes. All right. There is a first warning bell. Because even on my sheet, I don't have an ending time. 2:30 to at least till 3:30 when Eric takes over. Does anybody have any questions? I mean, just while we have a couple of minutes. It can be something that we've seen or looked at or some other thought.
How did they get all the pictures of like different galaxies that are like, you know, thousands of light years away?
Huh? Great question. All right. So we're talking about this enormously vast universe. All right. So people have heard of telescopes. Hubble Space Telescope. All right. There's some of the highest mountains in Hawaii and in South America, Canary Islands. They put these enormous telescopes on the top so that they can have nice clear views. And they have cameras, you know, that have way more than 40 megapixels to them. All right. And so they take images of the sky, and most everything that I showed you other than the Milky Way galaxy was an image. This is a nebula image, all right? They're so faint, okay? We don't see them with our eyes when we look out because they're so faint that usually they have to take long exposures. Anybody ever used a camera and you take a picture in a really, really bright place and you look at the picture and it's all what they call blown out? All the whites and yellows are, you know, extremely bright. Well, that was overexposed. The exposure was too long. But for astronomy, we take long exposures. We build up all that light looking at the same spot for a long time, and we get these, you know, beautiful images of very far off objects. All right. Any other thoughts or questions? Yes, sir. Say it again.
The energy that will be in them.
How do we know the energy, or is there energy in them? What
yeah.
is there energy? Absolutely. Light is a form of energy. All right, and like we said, there's X-ray all the way down to radio. Each light wave carries a different amount of energy, and so when you see X-ray images, you're talking about extreme densities and extreme temperatures that are able to release these X-ray and gamma-ray photons, bursts of light.